This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com. Welcome to Dishy Mix. This is Susan Bratton, your host. And on today's show, we have Jack Myers. Jack is the founder and CEO of Myers Publishing, and we're going to talk not only about what that's all about, but also what's happening with Jack these days, and most interestingly, the new book that he has coming out. I'll let you know all about that in just a minute.
We made some comments on Heroes and had some fans sound off about Heroes in its first couple weeks, and all of a sudden, we got a message from Tim Kring, the creator and showrunner of Heroes, kind of filling us in on what was going to happen. And it was an exclusive and unique, and only because he was looking to get fan feedback.
On the reputation system research that you did last year, who was at the top?
Yahoo consistently has performed very well. Forbes.com performs very well. NewYorkTimes.com has done very well. Google, interestingly enough, is very highly rated and has been consistently for a couple of years.
The book discusses the potential that virtual worlds have to dramatically alter the emotional code of the human race. Let's dissect that sentence.
That's a pretty big concept.
I like it.
We're an intellectually based society. But we have three centers of intellectual processing. We have our brain, we have our heart, and we have our gut. In virtual worlds, we're learning to process relationships and to act based on our heart and our gut. And they take prominence over our brain. That's a huge transition.
Welcome, Jack.
Thanks, Susan.
How are you today?
I'm great. Good to be here with you.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. One of the things I love about doing the show is having time just to sit down and have a nice talk with people that I'm always so impressed with. So thanks for giving us that time.
My pleasure.
So I would love for our listeners, first of all, to understand better what Media Village and the Jack Myers media business is all about. Can you just give us a little level set on what that is?
Sure. The basic business is we serve the media and advertising communities. We publish a number of reports that are subscription-based, built around the Jack Myers Media Business Report. And we essentially look behind the scenes in the media industry, what's driving the economics, the business models, the technologies that are impacting on media and advertising across the board. And then we also do a lot of consumer research on perceptions, attitudes, and what I call emotional connections that audiences have for the media they consume, whatever those media may be, whether it's broadcast, cable, online, print, out of home, whatever, wherever they're exposed to media and entertainment, what are the emotional ties and connections that people have to the media choices they make? So we do a lot of research on that. MediaVillage.com, MediaVillage.com is a TV fan site, basically. It's pop culture. We focus heavily on the most popular television shows from Lost and American Idol to Design Star to Gilmore Girls and far more. And basically, it's a community of TV fans, and we identify people who are passionate and interested in television, and we invite them to participate in various research studies that we do for the industry about television and provide feedback and direct connections between fans and the professionals responsible for producing, writing, directing, and putting the television programs on the air.
So MediaVillage.com is really your net to catch the television influencers on the internet.
I think net to catch is maybe accurate, but inappropriate. I'd call it more a place, a home, a village where people who love television can come and read about it, connect to it, and more importantly, have an they're the only place where they have an opportunity to sound off to the TV shows and TV executives that they like if they're unhappy about a show being canceled or wondering why a certain plot line twisted in one way or another, or upset about a star leaving a show, or have questions. We're the only place where both professionals and fans come and can communicate with each other and interlink. So most of the industry professionals come to Media Village because they like kind of hearing the voice of the fan, and they can we'll write about a show like we wrote early on about Heroes, and we made some comments on Heroes and had some fans sound off about Heroes in its first couple weeks, and all of a sudden we got a message from Tim Kring, the creator and showrunner of Heroes, kind of filling us in on what was going to happen, and it was an exclusive and unique, and only because he was looking to get fan feedback and came to Media Village for it.
I think it's a brilliant idea to put together a site like that. What was the inspiration? When did you come up with that idea?
Originally had the idea in 1999 and began building the site, but then, of course, there was the internet crash. Returned to the idea in 2004 and launched Media Village in 2005. I'll tell you, though, Susan, it's not easy. It's not easy to compete with for fans' attention, no matter how good our content may be. You know, there's millions and millions of dollars being spent in promotion and search engine marketing and other marketing tools by the, you know, TV.com and TVGuide.com and so many other top sites, AOL, Yahoo, MSN, that have their own TV sites. And then on the other side, there's the very dedicated site. There's the sites that are 100% focused on a particular show, a particular series. And so it's very difficult when we don't have the big marketing bucks to communicate and let the audiences know that we're out there. It's not as viral as everyone thinks. It's not as simple to launch a site and all of a sudden have millions of people coming to it overnight. That just really doesn't happen unless you have a quirk of fate or a particularly inspired single idea that captures people's attention. But we're trying to be a fairly broad-ranging site covering a lot of topics and new things every day, and it's much more challenging.
So what are the top three most effective things you do to draw traffic to your site? That's a perennial issue with all of my listeners.
Well, of course, what we want to do better is search engine optimization and search engine marketing.
Yep.
Well, we don't really have the budgets for search engine marketing to buy the keywords, so we do our best to do search engine optimization to make sure that the spiders crawl the site and recognize what we're doing. But the challenge, again, is today we're writing about Degrassi High, and yesterday we wrote about American Idol, and tomorrow we'll be writing about a different show. So it's very difficult to, on an SEO basis, to constantly be updating. For example, our single most successful story that we've written was an interview with stars of High School Musical, and we were the first website to do any interviews. It was before High School Musical launched, and so we had High School Musical kind of established with the spiders, and then when it became the huge hit it's become, we continue to pop up prominently in the search engines, but that's because it's a sustaining property. Same thing with Miley Cyrus and Hannah Montana. We were very early on doing interviews there, but when we write about Degrassi High today, and that story is basically in the archives tomorrow, it's much more challenging to build a constant flow. So we're dependent on loyal audiences who come back day in and day out, and that's really the key thing that we're doing, is working on developing community features to bring people, a loyal audience, back day after day and hopefully get word of mouth going. And we're building the National Media Advisory Board, which is a nonprofit organization that is membership and gives people a true opportunity to give feedback to the TV networks that the networks pay attention to in their programming decisions, and building that community and giving people a real sense of belonging and sense of mission and opportunity is probably our key initiative right now.
How much time do you spend on a daily basis writing?
Well, less and less. Writing is my passion.
Yep, you're good at it.
Up until 2000, consulting was my primary business, and writing was my avocation. I wrote a daily report for my clients as a value added to them, and in 2001 closed the consulting practice and began focusing exclusively on writing. Now the business, the research business, is building up. We're launching a new website in a month. JackMyers.com is a business-to-business site for the industry. So I'd say the answer right now, I spend about 20 to 25% of my time writing.
And how many people are in your budding empire, Jack? And you can include contractors and consultants.
Well, if you include freelance,
yep.
There's 8 full-time. There's another 6 professional writers, and then there's another couple of dozen bloggers who work on Media Village on a regular basis, making contributions, and who get small compensation.
What's the small compensation on the blogger business? I think there are a lot of people who'd like to hire very part-time bloggers to keep their content fresh and to capture that individual's perspective.
Yeah, it varies from, depending on the skills, the competence, from $25 to $500, and it averages out at about $150 a column.
Got it. Yeah. Okay, that's good. Is there any kind of an online place that you can find good writers who are willing to blog, kind of like a market, like a Craigslist for writers?
Yeah, we've actually found some of our best writers, just people who are submitting sound off comments to us, but MediaBistro.com is the best I've found for identifying writers.
Yeah, Laurel Talby. Now, we both know her through the TED conference. Did you
yep.
see her there?
Yes, sure.
Yeah.
I invited her to be there, as a matter of fact.
Oh, that's great. Right.
I think Laurel's terrific, and she's done a great job with Media Bistro.
That's a good resource to consider for a lot of our listeners who need copywriting, blogging assistance on an as-needed basis. So that's good. Shout out to Laurel. So another touch point for you and I, Jack, in the 10 or 12 years that we've known each other is in the sales team assessment category. Back a long time ago when the internet was first getting started, you were doing team assessment, or you have a better word for it.
Yeah, well, it still do it. That's, in fact, a core part of the business and has been for 25 years. We do annual surveys of the advertising community, advertisers and agencies, on sales organization performance, customer satisfaction, and we do both for the television industry and for the online community. In fact, we have a survey going out next week to a couple of thousand advertising industry executives, asking them to rate over 200 online sales organizations in a half dozen different categories of competence.
So we have a lot of media people, a lot of marketers, a lot of agency professionals. Where would they go if they would like to rate sales teams and participate in that survey?
They should email me to get onto the distribution list.
Great.
For the survey. It's jm@jackmyers.com, and that's M-Y-E-R-S. We are, in fact, part of establishing jackmyers.com is to begin an initiative where we'll be capturing insights and information on sales organizations on a 24/7 basis. So a salesperson, a marketing executive from a network or a website walks out of the office, and the advertiser agency can come right to jackmyers.com, identify the sales organization, the salesperson, and rate provide a rating.
Wow. In the world of infinite transparency, we've just taken a giant step.
It's so important. You know, communications and quality assurance is such a critical part of every single industry, except the media and advertising business, where essentially there have not been real measures of quality control. And I think as we move toward a Google universe, and as we move toward more exchanges and online media buying and selling, I think customer satisfaction measures are going to be a critical part of the industry.
You're creating a reputation system for the sales infrastructure.
Thank you for saying that. That's perfect.
Yeah, there you go. You can have that one, Jack. So I want to get two things from you, and these are just quick answers because I'm dying to get into the book. And I want to talk about you as Jack as well. So we have plenty of things here we still need to cover. Two quick answers. One, on the reputation system research that you did last year, who was at the top and who was at the bottom?
Well, you know, there's over 200 organizations, and it varies depending on categories. There's seven different categories we measure, but Yahoo consistently has performed very well. Forbes.com performs very well. NewYorkTimes.com has done very well. Google, interestingly enough, is very highly rated and has been consistently for a couple of years. AOL has moved up in the rating systems. But you get a wide variety. Weather.com overall has been the top performer now for 2 years running. And Weather Channel on the television side is also the top rated sales organization. So the Weather organization has done very well. And Liz Janneman, who's one of the people who headed the TV side of Weather, has just moved over to Current, Al Gore's company, to head sales there.
Oh, yeah, I'm very interested in that organization. And so you've told us about the darlings. Are there any dogs you can mention?
Oh, you know, that'd be unfair, because what we do is measure people. While we capture data on negative ratings, we ask people to rate the organizations on a 1 to 7 scale. Our rankings are based on percent rating them 6 or 7 on the 7-point scale. We're really looking for who's doing the excellent job. And the information on who's really doing a piss-poor job, we keep confidential, and that's shared individually with each of the organizations.
Well, you've always been a high-caliber person, and that's just one more instance of it. Give me another quickie answer. On the emotional connections, the consumer research studies that you do, for my audience, which is primarily the interactive media marketing world, the people in the internet building websites, the next generation of websites, what could you tell us? Throw us a freebie Jack Myers bone on the emotional connections piece of the interactive research.
You know, it's really extraordinary that as we're moving into social spaces, communities, virtual worlds, which is what my book is about, emotional connections become more and more important. And we're moving progressively away from a mass media marketplace where advertisers would spray their messages out intrusively, hitting as many people as possible without really being concerned about how people were receiving the message. It was just put it in front of them and give them as many millions of exposures as possible. What's happening today is that media, especially online media, are looking for ways to really ingratiate themselves and build loyalty among a more core group of people. And we're seeing that more and more with the social networks and virtual worlds, the instant messaging, with so many new technologies are built around loyalty-based marketing. And you really have to capture how engaged people are with the content, whether the connection they have to the content is able to transfer itself to the advertisers, and whether, because of their loyalty and passion for the environment, for the media, they're more likely to purchase the products being advertised. And we need to really begin finding ways to capture that data as opposed to just how many people are being exposed to a message and how many people are clicking through. It's what's the emotional response to the message, and how does the environment that it's in impact on that emotional response? And that's what we're trying to measure.
You're really moving beyond the measurement of engagement, which is kind of what we talked about last year, to maybe measuring the value of gratitude marketing.
I haven't used the word gratitude marketing, but it's a great word.
That's your second one from me.
I'll take that one also.
You can have it.
It's important. You're exactly right. Engagement with the content is one small piece of the process. It's what happens once you're engaged with the content, and how does the advertiser, marketer benefit from that, and do the and what's the trust in the advertiser based on the media, and then what's also at the same time the responsibility of the media to oversee and have a role in selecting the advertisers who can be involved with them because of the value of that brand equity.
So let's talk about your book. It's called Virtual Worlds, Rewiring Your Emotional Future. You've co-authored this with Jerry Weinstein, who I see as an editor on your site as well.
Yeah.
The book discusses the potential that virtual worlds have to dramatically alter the emotional code of the human race. Let's dissect that sentence.
That's a pretty big concept.
I like it.
It's really, what we're really talking about are the kids who are being born today, who are being born into virtual worlds. We have generations that were born into television, generations who were born into the internet, for whom it's just a part of their lives. And for those of us who are not born into a life of a virtual world reality, it's going to be hard for us to really understand the impact it's going to have on the generations. For these young people, it's a lot like the amphibians climbing out of the ocean and onto land for the first time, and they can comfortably go back and forth between both worlds. They can breathe air, and they can swim in underwater comfortably. This new generation is going to be able to go back and forth between a virtual world and a physical world. And I don't call it a virtual versus a real world, because for those people who spend time in virtual worlds and who have lives in virtual worlds, like Second Life or There.com or Doppelganger or Gaia, if you're a kid, or Club Penguin or Webkinz, very real. And what is most exciting to me is that these generations who are being born into virtual worlds are experiencing relationships in a very different way. We've been trained for the last 100 years to process everything intellectually. We have to think before we act. We buy something emotionally, impulsively at the checkout counter, and then we regret it after we have thought about it for a while. We're an intellectually based society, but we have three centers of intellectual processing. We have our brain, we have our heart, and we have our gut. Most of our society and most of our experiences have taught us to repress our heart and our gut in favor of our brain, and to, again, think before we act, or to process our actions not based on what we feel, but based on what we think. In virtual worlds, we're learning to process relationships and to act based on our heart and our gut, and they take prominence over our brain. That's a huge transition. And for those generations who are being born and will be growing up in virtual world environments that will be far more sophisticated than the early stage Second Life and other virtual worlds we have today, they're going to be learning how to act and think with their heart and their gut, taking prominence over the brain. And I think that's going to be fascinating. I think it could lead to less repression of emotions, less depression as a result, that we'll be learning how to act in the physical world based on our experiences in the virtual world. And that's what the book is about, basically.
Oh my God, Jack, that is incredible. My mind is literally reeling from the concept of the impact that coming from your gut and your heart as even equal or even a small percentage of your approach to your life, what kind of an impact that can make. And then thinking about what marketers are going to have to do to change the way the rational features and benefits, value-oriented marketing that we have today, how much that's going to change for these future generations. Not future generations, this is the today's generation, right?
And that's why the testing and the experimentation of marketers in Second Life and other virtual worlds are so important. But they can't just take their current campaign thinking and their current strategic plans and implement them in a Second Life. It's counterintuitive. What's even more interesting about the book is two things. One, because virtual worlds are a moving target, and because they're constantly changing and growing and we're learning every day, the book itself is just the starting point, and I've invited readers to subscribe at no cost once they buy the book for $15.95. It's available in Amazon.com, Borders.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and so on. I'll put in a gratuitous plug.
Please do, because we all want to buy it now. And I will put a gratuitous plug on my blog with links to Amazon for you.
Thank you. And,
yeah.
But once people buy a book, they can go to the website, register at no cost, and receive monthly updates.
Nice.
On virtual worlds. So we're inviting readers to submit their virtual world experiences. And what I'm having the most fun with is the very last chapter. It's a short book. It's 115 pages long. The last chapter is the first chapter of a novel called CyberParadiseSociety.com. It takes place in a virtual world 25 years in the future, and it's a mystery. And we're inviting readers to submit chapter two. And we're going to select the best chapter two, we'll publish it, and then we'll invite readers to submit chapter three and so on. And every winner will be a profit participant if and when the book is published in total. Maybe there'll be film rights or video rights or whatever. So we're having some fun with it.
That is amazingly clever, the idea of a collaborative book development using the wisdom of crowds. I love that. I know there are a couple people who are doing that. I think Joe Jaffe's doing something like that. Guy Kawasaki's working on an idea for, I think his followers are helping name his next book. I think it's either name or the cover or the combination. And I love this idea of the group build. It strikes me that I'm hearing a lot in the marketplace now about collaborative fantasy. I see a groundswell among many people that I talked to about this. Last week, I was at MySpace. I emceed an industry event they did where they unveiled the first market research of consumer insights about how consumers are using MySpace and other social networking worlds. And one of the things that I heard was, you know, Rex Briggs from Marketing Evolution.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
I'm sure you knew Rex. He came out with the kind of the best practices for marketers who want to engage in the social networking space. And one of the tenets of his advice was to allow your customer to develop their own fantasy about your brand, to have fantasy play with your brand. And it's a lot like what you're doing, too. I tend to see these little connections all over the place. I will post a link to that research on the blog when we're done with our show today as well, and make sure that you get a copy of that. But I keep hearing about fantasy, and it definitely goes back to what you're saying about the heart and the gut and the willingness to be irrational in a really positive and playful way.
That's a great point, Susan, and the idea that you can have a fantasy life in a virtual world, in fact, may reflect more about your true self and who you truly perceive yourself as.
Yes.
Than the way you portray yourself in a physical world where we're constantly being judged and evaluated. I mean, the nice thing is that you can try on new identities, become different models of virtual selves. And you can also assume there are possible negative implications of this as well. I've chosen to emphasize what I think are some of the positive implications for society and for the generations being born today.
My mind is going in a million directions. One thing I wanted to talk about was, have you seen the Brittany Mason show? It's a video podcast. Brittany Mason is an avatar from Second Life, and she does a show biweekly podcast. Have you watched that?
I have not.
Very interesting. Definitely check that out. B-R-I-T-N-E-Y. Yeah, Brittany Mason.
See, that's exactly the type of story, and we'd love to have her as her avatar write a chapter for a future chapter for rewiring your emotional future and share her experiences.
Happy to make that connection for you. What was the moment when you realized the body-heart connection in the virtual space and the level of impact that you believe, and I agree with you, that this will have on the mentality of the next generation?
Well, that's a great question, and I'm not sure I can identify a moment when it suddenly gelled, but in the mid-1990s, I was really looking at the industry and somewhat frustrated by the years of believing that marketers and media companies needed to really put themselves together in a way other than the industrial age, mass media age model, that there were opportunities for marketers to take advantage of the more highly targeted TV networks and the programs that were making really strong connections with audiences, but yet all the traditional models remained. And I felt for that model of stronger relationships to work, there had to be some kind of currency. And I began thinking about the currency, and I began thinking about, well, how do you measure what people are responding to emotionally? And then I started thinking about the heart and the gut, and, you know, how do you get a hold of that? And there are well-tracked studies on the amphibian brain, the reptilian brain, mm-hmm. and the mammalian brain.
Sure.
You know, that the heart, the gut, talks that when you put the heart, the gut together, you get the soul. And it's just been really part of my thinking and part of my life for as far back as I can remember, just thinking there had to be more than just in our business than just throwing a bunch of meaningless messages out there and, you know, kind of tracking ratings to see how many connections you make. And I'm not sure there was a specific moment. I took last summer and spent it on the beach as much time as I could with the goal of writing a book. And it was just a very traditional business book that I was writing. And I found myself kept constantly coming back to emotions. And that's when I really sat down and said, all right, I want to find a way to connect what's going on in media today back to emotions, and virtual worlds seem to be the coalescence of so much that's happening in the internet. I think at virtual worlds, we're going to have highly targeted search and behavioral targeting and all the things that are happening in a professional way with the internet. I think we're going to find a home in virtual worlds, and that's where people will increasingly center themselves and build their own personal lives in the internet through virtual worlds.
You've spent so many years in the rational world with your research and your quantification and your market forecasts.
I would say I've spent all these years in an irrational world, but okay.
What I'm saying is that in your midlife, you are your heart and soul are erupting out of you, and that's the stuff that you want to engage in. It was funny. Have you heard about Twitter?
Yes, yes, very much so.
Have you been Twittering yet?
I have not Twittered yet because, you know, as much as I can think about these things, write about these things, even understand these things, you know, put me down to actually do these things, and I become the middle-aged guy that I am.
Well, you're a very handsome. You're a hottie for a middle-aged guy. And I'll tell you, I'm middle-aged too, Jack. And I think
you're a hottie middle-aged lady.
Rock on. You know, I think we've got to come up with a better word than middle-aged, because it's just not working for our generation, you know.
Well, back to, you know, it's young at heart.
Yes.
Back to the heart.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's what it's all about.
Exactly. Beautifully said. I was Twittering, I think, last night or yesterday sometime, because, I was doing my research on you. And I read an article about Caniva. And this is a new virtual world that I hadn't heard about. And I was Twittering to my friends that I was still in Second Life trying to figure out how to turn my avatar into the Viking goddess that I really am. Like, I want the horns. I want the double D boobs. I want to be 8 feet tall. You know, this is what I'm trying to create in Second Life. I'm trying to figure out how I get Viking horns in Second Life. So if anybody listening can help me with that, this is what I'm looking for. And I'm Twittering saying, I still can't even figure out how to create my avatar in Second Life. And now, according to Jack, there's this whole new world that I need to go discover called Kaneva, which sounds really interesting because it's media sharing, which is what I love to do.
Yeah, and it's a little friendlier in terms of usage. And then, of course, there's virtual Laguna Beach and virtual logo and, you know, there's virtual everything these days. So
I love it. Well, I really wish you a lot of success with your book. I'm buying it, and I can't wait to read it. And I'm also glad it's only 115 pages. I have to listen to a lot of podcasts every week. So amen for short, punchy books with a lot of great ideas. You and I both are attendees of the TED conference. And you've been involved with Bill Clinton before. In 1995, you were asked by President Clinton to lead a delegation of ad executives to the White House Conference on Children's Educational Television.
Yes.
You've always been involved in those kinds of things. What did you think of Bill Clinton's request for assistance at the most recent TED conference?
Well, he's an inspired, inspirational, motivational speaker. He has the tremendous ability to appeal to us intellectually and through our hearts. And I thought the fact that he was requesting help to build an economic social structure in Rwanda, and his admission that he was as guilty as anyone for allowing the human destruction of Rwanda to continue, and his efforts to build that country, I thought were extraordinary. One of the frustrations I have TED as an event in general is that there are so many inspirational people. There are so many causes worth supporting. And of course, 2 years ago it was Al Gore doing
Inconvenient Truth
presentation and coalescing the whole TED group behind him. But there's so many causes, and we're so focused on our day-to-day existences. My aspiration in life is to get to a point where I can devote and dedicate myself to supporting causes, meaningful causes that I believe in and that others who I have an emotional connection believe in. But the reality is that I'm not at that point yet. So TED is both inspirational and a bit of a frustration for me.
It's a good frustration, I think. And I think at that, we're going to end our podcast today. It's definitely inspirational. And you're on a roll, Jack. I mean, I really feel like you have hit your stride. You're doing so many great things that help the industry move forward. I love the concept of your new book. I can't wait to read it. And I'm going to go check out Kaneva. And maybe you'll join Twitter and Twitter with me for a week or so just to play with me.
That's my next big initiative. Susan, I wish you all the best of luck with your podcasts and future and You're a great inspiration and a great leader for the industry, and I appreciate your taking the time to do this with me.
It is my pleasure. Squeezing out a hug to you right now, Jack.
To you. Back at you.
Have a great day. This is your host, Susan Bratton, and you have been enjoying the wonderful Jack Myers from MediaVillage.com. Have a great day, and I'll see you next week.
Find more great shows like this on PersonalLifeMedia.com.